My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Mindy for that last presentation. Wow, that was great. We're going into another view of first-year sponsorship. Larry here is going to be doing that. I've just become friendly with Larry. I didn't really know him. I had met him maybe 4 years ago speaking in Staten Island. But I didn't really get to know him until recently, and I'm really beginning to love this man. We've got some real similar experiences also. I'm not going to tell his story, but the way we discovered the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the way we've tried to create the fellowship that we crave in our certain areas is really, really alike. And our friend Joe Hawk had said, you have to have Larry as part of this. So I said, great, let's get him. So Joe didn't make it, but Larry did. And I'll turn it over to Larry. Go, Larry.
Thank you, Chris. My name's Larry Greenberg, and I am an alcoholic.
Larry!
And I belong to the Common Solution Group, and it's a very sick group. We all have the same solution. One solution that will work for every alcoholic. My sobriety date is September sometime, 1988. I was one of those relapsers that everybody in AA walked away from, said I did not want it bad enough. They had no idea about power, control, and choice. I went to a convention like this, and I heard the message of recovery. And through the grace of God, I recovered. I'm also, besides an alcoholic, the adult child of an Al-Anon. And I'd like to thank my Al-Anon Joanne, who I love, adore, and cherish, who is a huge part of my working with others. She supports me. She encourages me. She becomes a surrogate sponsor for every person I've ever worked for. Joanne gives them the love and the nurturing that I don't. And I am very serious about recovery. About a year ago, I was in a hospital, and they had nicked one of the arteries in my heart, and they punched tubes in my chest and draining blood out, and I'm in the intensive care unit, and I really wasn't sure if I'd be walking out, and I could barely talk. And what was the most important thing for me laying there was to give Joanne a list of the people I sponsor and to tell them where they are and where they're going, and knowing full well that my wife would guide them and take them to where they're going. Because there is nothing more important than their recovery for me. Now, a lot of times alcoholics have trouble understanding words. I really mean nothing as nothing. Nothing is more important than that friend that I've made once I take the obligation. Nothing at all. Chris was a little bit cocky the other day up here giving a story about his wife wanting to buy the town. So I decided I'd tell a little story I know about Chris. And this is a little Chrissy story when Chris was about 8 years old and Chris was in school. And the teacher was giving a science lesson. And she took a bottle of water and placed it in front of her and a bottle of scotch. And she placed a worm between them. And the worm was squiggling around. And she took the worm, held it up so the class could see it, and she dropped it into the water. And the worm swam up, and the worm swam down, and the worm swam up and swam down, and she picked the worm up, and she put it in the scotch. And the worm swam up and crashed to the bottom and lay there dead. And the teacher said, "Class, what does this teach us?" And Chris's hand went right up. "Ooh, ooh, me, teacher, teacher." And the teacher said, "Yes, Chris." And Chris replied, "It's very simple. If you drink scotch, you'll never have worms." Now, you may think that has nothing to do with sponsorship, but I have to be real honest with you. It has everything to do with sponsorship. Humor. We're not a glum lot. Somehow, I have to incorporate humor, fun, into this program. It's not about beating the hell out of somebody. This God of my understanding that I found certainly doesn't want me to do that. Now, I've read this book once or twice. It hasn't told me to beat the hell out of him. It's talked to me a lot about love, compassion, understanding. It also gives lots of words in the big book. And I found alcoholics can't comprehend them. And I heard Mindy talking about it. That word, never. Never really means never. And I found alcoholics have trouble with that word. And I have never been able to figure out if it's the net or the ver that they don't understand. But never means never. Strenuous really means strenuous. Vigorous really means vigorous. Wholeheartedly really means wholeheartedly. Now, walking side by side with the prospect, it's my job to explain that, to really overemphasize that. Before I tell you how I exactly work with people, which there is no exact, I like to go into a little five-minute meditation before they come over and just ask God for the right words. And I've done this a few times now that I'm secure enough to know that what comes will be right because it's from my heart. All I want to do is help. That's all I want to do. I want to help them find that power of their own. Not my power, their power. I am a product of experience. I've probably sponsored more than 300 people now. Almost half have been women. Wow, did this room get quiet? Yeah, sponsor women. I have found it a fabulous experience. A little later on, I like to always talk about the triangle and the circle, but I love to talk about that circle. And I love not only does it mean that I'm whole, it also means all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding. We're all children of a loving Creator. My Lord, this is my sister. How dare I turn her around, away? The greatest spiritual tragedy I've seen in AA is when we divide. Us in here, them out there, whites, blacks, Jews, Arabs, men, women. I'm thankful that I have a supportive wife who also walks a spiritual path. And there has never been an issue in my home. And if there was, I would lovingly ask my wife to please inventory her fears. It's not my business whether she consents or she doesn't. But I'm thankful. And Joanne, I love and adore you. And you make this walk an absolute joy. I was sponsored. I was sober 2 weeks. My sponsor had heard me say to somebody, make 90 meetings in 90 days. He said, Larry, I want you to come over my house tomorrow. I want to talk. I was so happy. Finally, he wanted to hear what I had to say. It's about time he learned exactly what was on my mind. And we got over and I said, you know, I got a few things to talk to you about. And he says, you're going to shut the hell up and listen. And I was appalled. And that's where I found out that sponsors lie. He had told me we had to talk and he just wanted me to listen. God love him. He tells Larry, I heard you tell someone to make 90 meetings in 90 days. I said, that's correct. He said, how could you tell someone to do something that they can't do? I said, what do you mean? He said, you think they have a power, the control, or the choice to make 90 meetings in 90 days? He said, instead of telling people what to do, get off your lazy alcoholic ass and take them to 90 meetings in 90 days. That was a powerful lesson for me. That lesson was, don't tell someone to do something and walk away. Grab their hand gently and lovingly and walk with them. I was at a meeting. I had 16 days sober, and the woman I was married to told me she wanted a divorce. I couldn't understand why she'd like to leave a loving creature like me. who abused her for 18 years. But she did, and I went to meetings, and I was devastated, and I shared, and I shared. And the old-timers would tell me, Larry, just turn it over. And I'd say, how do I do that? And they'd say, let it go. And I'd say, how do I do that? They'd say, turn it over. And I promise you, I wanted to send them to their God as soon as I could get my hands around their neck. Because you ain't telling me what to do. Later on, I was to find out that the way we turn it over and let go is in steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So I'm really extremely direct, explicit, but gentle in those first formative times. I mean, after all, it tells me that. I don't tell people what my sponsor told me. Shut your mouth. I listen to what they have to say. I need to know where they're at to place myself in their shoes. A sick person, do I have the mendacity to tell them, take the cotton out of your mouth, or out of your ears and put it in your mouth? How pompous could I be? We're dealing with a sick person. Love, tolerance, compassion, guiding principles in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I can't be an example of the program, something's wrong with my spiritual condition. I hate to be controversial, which I'm still working on honesty. It's a lie. I love to be controversial. I am still prey to some of my attachments, but what I am not prey to is my experiences. I was sponsoring a darling boy who was sober 11 months. I'm sorry. Who was sober 11 weeks. At 11 weeks, he had recovered from this disease. With 13 weeks, he came up to me and he said, Larry, I met this girl and she's darling. And I listened. I said, yes. He said, she is the sweetest. She is caring. She's not an alcoholic. She's everything I ever wanted. And I said, yes. And he went on and on and on, like my wife would do an Al-Anon. They go on and on and on. And finally, I couldn't take it anymore. And I said, Michael, is there a question you want to ask me? He said, yes. I met this girl. I want to take her out, but I know you're going to tell me no relationships for the first year. I said, Michael, is there a question you want to ask me? He said, yes. I met this darling girl. I'd like to take her out. I said, Michael, can you keep your sobriety the most important thing? He said, most assuredly. I said, please have a good time. Michael went out with this lovely girl. They're now married 7 years. They're having their third child. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous has still remained up front in his life. Still works with many. Always has. Knowing him, always will. I had to lose my attachment to being God. Can you imagine if I was God and I knew what he should do? God throws two people together. Do you expect me to play God and say you don't belong together? Wow, what a novel concept in the third step that I had to quit playing God. Can I take that spiritual principle into all my activities, including sponsorship? Can I walk the walk or just talk the talk? I think that's for every person to answer to himself. I have another guiding principle that is upmost and foremost in my sponsorship of new people. When we're talking about new people, I'm talking about the new friend who has just walked in, or that person who has been relapsing, who's been in and out, in and out, in and out. Who seems to be drawn to me. And the principle I like to keep foremost in my mind is there must be no middle-of-the-road solution. There must be no middle-of-the-road solution. And I have to be extremely careful that I never give them a middle-of-the-road solution. You see, I've come to believe through my own experience that a middle-of-the-road solution will not work for every alcoholic. And I certainly don't ever want to give somebody something that's not true. I would much rather spread the solution than the disease. How can I give someone a middle-of-the-road solution to believe that they have the power to do something when they have no power? Just another perception. Just things that I had to learn through bitter experience on working with others. When I'm asked to be someone's sponsor, I do ask them to please read the first 164 pages with a highlighter. Highlight whatever you think is important. You don't have to understand a darn thing. And Mindy spoke so well about having them express the willingness. And this is a part of the willingness. I've never seen a person not read the first 164 pages, go through the entire program of recovery, which is another topic that maybe I can cover later. Once they've read that, if it's not in a quick, timely manner, I ask them to reread it again. What could be more important? And I have to tell you, when I'm hurting, I'll do anything. And once again, I need anything. I ask them once again if they'd like me to be their sponsor. If the answer is yes, I have given this answer to everyone I've ever sponsored. I will be your temporary sponsor. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do not take prisoners or hostages. When you find someone who can give you more than I can, I pray that you go with them. I don't own them. They're God's child. They're not Larry's child. I'm just here to grab their hand and walk alongside of them, not lead nor follow behind, on the same plane, next to them. I love to ask that question. Are you willing to go to any lengths? Now, I found out that my definition of willing to go to any lengths is a lot different than the newcomers willing to go to any lengths. So I've learned to ask them, are you willing to do anything? If they give me something they're not willing to do, I tell them I can't sponsor them. It's that simplistic. Either you're willing to do anything or you're just not. I like to talk a lot about our circle and our triangle. I like to talk a lot about the fellowship because I don't do that much. I like to stress it, how they need the fellowship, how they need people in their lives, how they need a support system of people who are working the same solution as them. I don't believe in waiting to start the work. I've worked with quite a few people. I believe when they say intensive work with alcoholics, they really mean intensive work. It's kind of like the intensive care unit. Critical, life and death. I do not want to withhold the solution. I like to work with a new person 6 times a week. All the time. Strenuously, vigorously. Can I take those guiding spiritual principles into my life? Can I make this new person the most important thing, the most important object of my focus? And there's been times I haven't been able to, and I knew it wasn't right for me to work with the person. I didn't have it. When I do, it's a pleasure. I believe in reading every single word in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and those who you've heard before have so masterfully told us how to do it. I love to start off with a prayer, and this is my own experience. And the prayer goes something like, or exactly like this. God, please take away the obsession, compulsion, thought, and desire for me to drink today. And I have them write it on cards and keep one in their pocket, one in their car, one everywhere. And every time their mind goes towards a drink, I beg of them to go to the power. Please don't call me first. Please don't run to a meeting. Go to the power. Then call me. Go to a meeting. Go to somewhere else. I like to start that spiritual practice. It was important for me to listen to them, to know where they're at, Do they have any belief at this time in this power of God? I've run into people that said, I don't believe in God. How could I say that? And I don't know where words come from me. I said, could you believe that I believe? He said, yes. I said, could you ask my God? He said, yes. I said, terrific. Ask my God to please take away the obsession, compulsion, thought, and desire. I believe that's one of the most powerful things that I could do with an alcoholic. There must be no middle-of-the-road solution. Any other solution, how to have a deep and effective spiritual experience, and my experience won't work. I really like to work extensively. I like to keep everything in its simplistic manner with my new friend. I like to meet with him many, many times, quickly. I know when he's got 9 days sober, he's going to be writing inventory, or 7 days. And I really like to complicate it for him. As soon as we do three, which is rather quickly, I mean, it's taken us all of about 5 days or 7 days, and I really sometimes wonder what's taking me so long. Because our forefathers did it a hell of a lot quicker than me. I like to ask them a very simple exercise after making their decision. And I like to stress after the decision, though this decision is vital and crucial, it will have little permanent effect unless at once, now, followed by a strenuous and vigorous effort to face step 4 and be rid of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the things that were blocking us from this power that we need to live. So I like to make it emphatic, and I like to go back to willing to go to any lengths, do anything. Are they now willing, right after making that decision, on their knees, holding hands, to ask God to help them and keep walking, holding God's hand, to do 5, 6, 7, 8, 9? I've never had a no. If someone has sincerely taken the third step, I have had problems with people who weren't willing. And since this is first year sponsorship, I'm sure we've all faced many problems with people. And I don't really think it's a problem. You see, I had to lose my attachment to the good and to the bad. Because I don't know what's good and bad. If the person balks and goes out and drinks, is it bad? I've seen it be very good. I think sometimes drinking is wonderful. It beats me into a state of reasonableness. But that's only my attachments that I had to lose to what's good and bad. So I just don't know a lot of times. I just keep walking forward. Right after three, I ask them to take out the paper, and when I know we're going to do three, they come with a yellow pad like this, and I ask them to please ask this God to please show me exactly what I need to see that blocks me from you and from my fellow man. And we start into four. Immediately, promptly, we make a list, and we do it under God's care. You see, I don't write inventory. I don't ask a newcomer to write inventory. I ask him to ask God to rely on that which has given him grace. Please show me everyone I've been resentful with. And sometimes alcoholics have a rough time with that resentment. So I change it, and I say, everyone you've ever been pissed off at. And I've never seen an alcoholic not understand that. They got lots of them. And I start off guiding him, walking with him, saying, have you ever been pissed at relatives, mother, father, aunts, uncles, sisters, brothers, and we do family, and we do friends, and we do girlfriends, and we're making a list after we've asked God. And when the pen stops writing, you know what? The spiritual exercise, not intellectual exercise, is finished. We then immediately, we've done three, now we're in four. We go into column 2. And I ask for no stories. Get to the point. Mommy put me on the potty backwards. Whatever it is, and we write for mommy. We write why I was angry at mommy, every resentment, daddy, whatever it may be. We then do start column 3. Can you imagine starting 3, doing 3, starting 4, doing the first column, doing the second column? Doesn't intensive really mean intensively critical? Dealing with their life. Can I give what I've committed to? My time, my knowledge, my love, my patience. And I do a few of the 7 areas to show them how it should be done. Now, by this time, as you could gather, it could be quite late at night. So I like to be very gentle and easy and tell them to go home, and I'll see them in 2 days. And I want it finished. That means when they come home from work, there's nothing more important. I don't think that if I ask God to help me see, it just flows. Just write down what comes. Or am I going to make this an intellectual exercise? Spiritual, trusting God, intellectual. Do I have to ponder every thought, or can I ask God and trust what comes, comes? They're back the next day. Column 3, and we go into column 4. I like to add something to the 4 areas that most of us talk about, and it was talked about here. I like to talk about, and I like to start the 4th column with, where did I start the ball rolling, or where am I at fault? I find that makes inventory very easy for the new person. I expect them. They know it by now. They've understood. They're on the path. One step opens the door to the other. The flow is there. I'm in the grace. I'm in the power. He guides me. I have found when I do this with newcomers once a week, the flow has stopped. I don't know why. I can't give you an answer. It's just been my experience. And that's the one thing that I got to keep in here, my experiences. I don't care how lousy it's done. I don't want to make this an intellectual exercise. Since I've helped them write their first 6 or 7, they've seen where they start the ball rolling. They've seen how they expect people to be different than they are. They've seen that they're God. They know how everybody should be. And they start to see their own selfishness. Not as I see it. I don't expect them to have my perception. I don't expect them to have your perception. This is a new person. How would we treat a sick person? Well, I tell you one thing. I'd want to treat a sick person quickly. Real quickly. And then we do sex. After they're finished, they go home and they work on it. Now, I tell them work is work. I expect them to work at least 4 or 5 hours a day. And that's not including the weekends. If it's the weekend, I expect that alarm clock to be set for 7 in the morning and call me at 7. Call me back at 8 when you're going to start this work. And you call me back at 10 at night when you're finished. Unless you could tell me what's more important than discovering the things that block me from this power that I need. Is anything more important, or am I really willing to make this the most important thing in my life? And we do sex. And sex has become a joke in my family. It seems that's all we talk about. And I love to loosen it up and tell them how I hated doing sex. Because I did not want to work right down German Shepherd. But it's true. I have learned to be free, that there's nothing I can't say from this podium. And I have found that humor and laughter and truth works fabulously. I have never seen a problem between men and women. I've had the intimacy with all. I love them. They're my brothers. They're my sisters. We're all children of a living creator. And, of course, we went into fear. I do not want to go into the extended third column with the first person. I do not want to go into theater of the lie. I do not want to go into four column. When these things were done, steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, we would enter into a new relationship with my Creator. I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. I want them to have this new relationship with their Creator. If recovery doesn't come till 10 and 11, what the hell am I going to keep them stuck in four for? For sickness. Wow, what a novel idea. And it ain't mine. It's right here on page 13. I have come, I have to follow this. And I not only follow it because it's in the big book, because I've experienced what's on these pages. I don't believe it just because it's here. I believe it because I've met those men and women who walked this path long before me, who have experienced everything in this book. I, in turn, have experienced it. I like to keep it the way it was when 75% of us recovered. Because I don't know what the statistics are today. I'm a real simplistic kind of Brooklyn guy. Uneducated. You know, where I came from, I thought Moby Dick was a porno flick. So I'm not too good at being intellectual. I'm real good at following directions about walking hand in hand with my new friend. And I got to tell you this. There hasn't been one person that I've sponsored, male or female, that I haven't absolutely fallen in love with. Every single one. I like to spend a lot of time on the triangle. I like to spend a lot of time on that. The three parts that we need. I like to talk about it being a progressive illness. And that if I only, through the grace of God, can stop drinking, doesn't the mental and the spiritual keep progressing? I like to stress all these things that were stressed to me. And to do that, it takes time. It means I have to open my heart and my home and invite my new friends in and give them everything. Can I finally take the leap of faith that God will do for me what I can't do for myself as long as I stay close to Him and perform His work well? I've taken that leap of faith. There was a time on Staten Island where I worked with people 7 days a week. And on Saturday and Sunday, it was three each day. And people told me, Larry, you can't do that. You have to find balance. And I went to my big book and I looked for balance. And I didn't find balance. But I found that line that I got to stay close to God and do His will. And the truth came out for me in 10 that His will is for me to help His kids. That's His will for me. Doesn't have to be for you, but it truly is for me. Since I left off, and I'm kind of like Mindy, I get sidetracked, and I don't know where these things come from, other than I ask God, please God, let me say what I'm supposed to say. I was at a meeting about 4 years ago, and this little beautiful, gorgeous girl came up to me, and she was so proud, and she said, Larry, I'm an inventory. And I said, no, you're not. And she said, no, Larry, I'm an inventory. And I said, no, you're not. She said, no, you don't understand. I'm an inventory. And I said, no, you don't understand. You're not an inventory. And she paused and asked me the question I was waiting for. Well, where the hell am I then? I said, you're here at a meeting. You're out of inventory. Wow, what a perception. What a perception. How can I be in two places at once? I like the people that I'm working with. You forget going to the fellowship. You do this immediately. We can make a midnight meeting. We could go to Manhattan. We can make a meeting 2, 4, 6, or 8 in the morning. But you make this the most important thing in your life, walking hand in hand with your Creator. And I have to remember that that desire must come from them. Hopefully after step one, they've seen the devastation and they've seen that they're screwed. Hopefully on page 52, they've seen the bedevilments. And I love the exercise after reading page 52 to show the unmanageability within. To ask them if they have it, and yes, 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 and ask them to fix themselves. To once again sink home, not only am I powerless over alcohol, I'm powerless over me, and I can't fix me, and I need this power that's going to fix me. So what is more important than me finding this power? I have found nothing is more important. Now, I have a lot of trouble, I've told you, with people in Alcoholics Anonymous, especially those I work with. Nothing means nothing. Nothing is more important than me walking hand in hand with them to find their Creator. So I make this the most important thing. I've never had trouble with step five, with somebody. Matter of fact, the truth of it is, I have found sponsoring women, their fifth steps are so much better than us guys. They're so much more honest and open. And I don't know if it has to do with the sensitivity of the feelings, but the heart opens up and it just comes out. And I do think sometimes it takes us guys a little bit longer to be able to do that. I don't waste much time in six. I don't waste much time in seven. We do it. I don't believe this is a big book study. Studying this big book, you might as well go to the bar and ask for a triple scotch. Ain't no good if you study it. I gotta do it. It's a big book, do it. Now remember, I'm from Brooklyn, and I'm kind of crude, but do it means do it. It means that's simplistic. Am I going to prompt and push them to do it? No. If one is to find God, the desire must come from within. But I do believe that usually when the work stops is I like to take them back to the requirement. What has changed since that requirement? Am I starting to run the show already to decide what I should do and what I shouldn't do? Am I starting to play God again? I'd like to talk about Michael, who was recovered at 11 weeks sobriety. And I think with 9 days, he was in inventory, 7 days, and people in meetings told him, slow down, you're going to drink. Don't do that, man. Don't you dare do that. You're going too fast. Don't you work the program of recovery. You'll drink. And Michael used to come to me and say, what do I do? And I say, hurry up, sucker. What do you see? He'd say, I better keep going. But Michael stopped writing inventory. And I called him. He didn't call me that day, and he told me he didn't write. And I asked him to please come over my house. And he came over my house. And we sat down at my dining room table. That's my favorite room for working with people. And I opened up our book. And I turned to the very beginning. And I read the words Alcoholics Anonymous. And I turned to the next page. And I read the story of how many men and women have recovered. And in my big book, I still have the circle and the triangle that we've lost. And he says, what are you doing? And I said, what do you mean, what am I doing? We're going through the program of recovery. He says, but I'm past that. I said, no, you're not. You've missed something. Something is missed. And that's the last thing I want to do, because I'm selfish, is start from the beginning and give my time. I found it a very effective, powerful tool. Start again. Something's missed. I can't beat this into somebody. I can't threaten them. This is an experience that one must have within. So we start from the beginning. We start again. Real simple stuff. Am I prepared to do all this before I take on the responsibility of sponsorship? Yes, I truly am. I love them to go out and find new prospects. And the way I like to have them do it is just go over when they see someone in pain or someone who is... I'm getting ahead of myself. We do 10. We do 11. I get fairly explicit with 10 and 11. I don't do them in the same day. I find it's too much for anyone to grasp. So we do step 10. We practice step 10. We practice looking for, as Michael and Kathy had told us, what to look for, the four areas, and to go to God, and what to do. I like to stress in there, as we cleaned up the past. I love to give the analogy of dumping a glass of milk on the floor and asking if I cleaned up 90%. Have I cleaned it up? And of course the answer is no. And then I ask what happens to the other 10% I've left there. And it starts to mildew and fungus and get disgusting. And that's within me. It starts to build. I let them know that I am going to go through the whole program of recovery. Doing everything. And at the end, they can decide if this is the way they'd like to live or not. And I've never seen somebody go through the entire program of recovery that has decided he doesn't want to live this way. And we do this all vigorously and strenuously. I like to start them off in meditation and prayer in 11. I am not a guru in meditation or anything else. I don't know much about it. I kind of stink at it. But I keep trying. Not too long ago, since I'm from Brooklyn, and I've been transplanted to Staten Island, I found that we have the Tibetan Museum there. And as I went to look at it, I found they give meditation classes. And I found out that the classes were given by a Tibetan monk. And wow, I've been meditating for 14 years, and I stink at it. Now, I don't want to tell you it was wasted, because it wasn't. But I'm a terrible meditator. Horrible. So I started taking lessons from someone who's an expert. Like you people are an expert with the newcomer. You have had that experience. And I have to be honest with you. I have been rocketed to new places. I have been brought to new places. Because of that experience, everyone I sponsor has to go. It's not a suggestion. You have to go and try it. You don't have to stay with it, but you can't have contempt prior to. We just heard last night about growing in understanding and effectiveness. It's important that we know, that we transmit the message that this is all about growth. I have found the last four chapters of our book just as important as the first four. I have found many guiding spiritual principles which myself and my new friend have to walk hand in hand. Have to. Mindy talked about the must. I found that a must is a have to and a have to is a must. I must follow these guiding spiritual principles. About this time, because they're flying. I've never seen one that isn't. They're just flying. They're just little instruments of God. And I want to look back and I want to evaluate. Have they picked up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at their feet? Wow, what a novel idea. to take that past 12, to really look and see what's not being done. I don't want to keep patting him on the back and stroking him. You know, I learned early on through experience when I had to call my sponsor every day and tell him what I was doing, and he said, how was the meeting? And I said, the meeting was boring and the meeting sucked. And he replied to me, you're boring and you suck. And he was not afraid to upset my sensitive alcoholic feelings. He believed more in showing me the truth. And that's what I'm there for. Not to shove it at them, but to hold it up so they can see it. This is also a great time because another one of those spiritual travesties is us in here somehow think we're better than those that don't drink and go to meetings. And we're not. But the ego has come up, and it's told me I'm special, and it's told me I'm better. And this is a good time to have a nice little inventory on spiritual arrogance. And I like to do it four column, and it's a very powerful tool to once again help the new friend. I've done a lot of talking as I'm with my new friend about the rebuilding of the ego. And we started off in its simplistic form. How my ego, the two basic main purposes are to stop me to go in here, self-examination, and stop me to go in there. Anytime I'm going out there, there's my ego. It's got me. And I found this tool is a fabulous, fabulous tool. The inventory, four column, spiritual arrogance. Sure is good for me today. Works. I also, when we get to this point, have two books that they have to read. I don't suggest it. After they wake up in the morning and they start upon awakening and ask God to direct my thinking, and then how I would like to go about that in a loving, kind manner, all the things I have to do, and finish reading all of step 11, I ask them to please pray. And as our manuscript says, on your knees, if they are there. If they're not, it's never a forced issue. After prayer, I have them go back and read step 10. After that, we meditate. After that, we read one of the new books. The first book I like to start people with, and this is coming from a Brooklyn Jew, is The Master, The Life of Christ, written by Pollock. Absolutely fabulous book, which has changed and inspired me and said, oh, dear Lord, please let me act as I am him. Please let me be that loving, that compassionate. When they don't know what's right or wrong, I love them to go to their God and ask. And I love to give them that very simple test. What would Jesus do? You do that, you'll be right. The next book I like them, once they're finished with that, is called An Open Heart with the Dalai Lama, by the Dalai Lama. I have them read a page and a half, after their meditation, to contemplate. To read at least a page, a half a page, till something happens, and stop, and sit with it, contemplate. But Larry, I have to get up at 4:30 in the morning. Yes, you do. Just like I do. I have to be in work at 7. I got to get up real early. I have found a great tool for helping the newcomer. Is the tapes. I have many favorites. I love to start them off with Ted Harbaugh from Oswego, who has humor in sobriety, talks about the program. Milt, Sean, Ken Devaney. I better say Joe Hawk. And I better mention how great I am and how thankful I am for Joe. Or I'll be getting a call. And I love you, Tatala. And I truly do. There are so many things that I've left out. But I hope I've given you the intent. I have found there are differences between working with men and working with women. I have found that women are much more feeling. And it sometimes takes them a lot longer to get through page 52, pray to my emotions, my feelings, to really get through how your feelings are not important. How you feel is no big deal. It's how you grab God's hand and walk and do His will. I don't want to hear your sickened emotions. And when you call me and you have a problem, I tell you, please inventory and call me back, and I hang it up. And they call me back, I say, what's the problem? They say, never mind, I found a solution. But there is a difference, and I do mean this without kidding aside, between men and women. And and especially in relationships. And I found this guide for women in relationships. And it says the 5 secrets of relationships. And it says, it is important to find the man who works around the house, occasionally cooks and cleans, and who has a job. And I like to read this to all the women I work with. It is important to find a man who makes you laugh. It is important to find a man who is dependable and doesn't lie. It is important to find a man who's good in bed and who loves to have sex with you. It is important that these 4 men never meet. I would seriously like to thank you all from the bottom of my heart. And I really, and I hope everyone in this room can lose their attachment to what is right and what is wrong. I hope that each person can go through the program recovery and ask their own God in their own way to please give me the right words to say. And if it comes from a pure altruistic stance, you will be doing right. Please, trust your own God. He loves you enough. You're sitting here. Thank you all.